Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. As day two of the COP26 climate conference got underway, UN Chief Antonio Guterres sent a stark message to the world. "We are digging our own graves," he said, referring to the addiction to fossil fuels that is threatening to push humanity and the planet to the brink.
As we open this much anticipated climate conference, we are still heading for climate disaster. Young people know it. Every country sees it. Small island developing states and other vulnerable ones live it. And for them, failure is not an option. Failure is a death sentence.
The stage was set to hear from global leaders, including the co-host, Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the United Kingdom, and presidents from France, India, United States and Germany, among others. Two young activists also addressed the conference, calling on leaders for bold action. COP26, which runs through November 12, is where countries will step up ambition to limit global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. This Monday, the world passed another somber milestone, 5 million lives lost to COVID-19. In a statement, the UN Secretary General asked leaders everywhere to honor these lives by making vaccine equity a reality. While some wealthy countries are rolling out third doses of the vaccine, only about 5% of the people in Africa are fully vaccinated. For Mr. Guterres, this is a global shame. With overcrowded hospitals, exhausted health workers and the risk of new variants, he said the world cannot let its guard down. The Secretary General also stressed the importance of vaccination goals. By the end of the year, 40% of people in all countries should be vaccinated. By the middle of next year, that number needs to go up to 70%. And finally, children and young people in Iraq are the most at risk of the impacts of climate change, especially water scarcity. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, is saying the situation threatens children's health, education and protection, exposing them to deadly diseases. For UNICEF, ambitious, comprehensive and urgent action is needed for every girl and boy in Iraq to have a chance at a better future. Alexandre Soares, UN News.
John Grant.
That's hey, John Grant. Yeah, you got to explain this. Let's go, Brandon. I'm still a bit confused.
I did some research since we talked in the earlier today, and I've got it. Now, it went on to airline pilot. There's an airline pilot. I forget which airline who slipped up and said it over the PA when he was talking to his passengers in the airplane. He ended up saying, "Let's go, Brandon," and "Let's go, Brandon." It's piled up. I mean, by the way, I think he's from Pennsylvania. Some congressman or assembly, a guy in the state legislature, ended up saying, "Let's go, Brandon." Well, now of course this is all code talk for fuck Joe Biden. I mean, this is code talk, you know.
So, but who's Brandon? Does it matter?
He's a NASCAR driver, and he won the Infiniti. And now this, I'm going to need your help, John, being an expat from Florida. I think this is Florida. Of course.
My favorite wacko state. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. Brandon Brown is the winner. Was the winner of this, and that's where it started. This let's go, Brandon. Fuck Joe Biden. Oh. Fuck you, Biden, or whatever. It's the city is called Talladega. Talladega. And I ran.
Talladega.
Is that Florida?
I think that's Alabama. I think Talladega is a big NASCAR race site. Yeah. Talladega
it's
Race Speedway, you know, something like that. Yeah.
It's such an ass crack name. I figured it had to be from Florida. It could be Alabama.
Yeah, it's sort of I think it's Alabama. Talladega race, you know, it's a huge race, NASCAR race place, you know, where they drive around.
I'll look it up. As we go through the show, I'll look it up.
Well, yeah, NASCAR, of course, is very, very big in the South. And, in fact, where I was raised in Homestead, Florida, just north of the Keys, once the hurricane hit there, Andrew, and tore the shit out of the place, they built up a huge NASCAR stadium or whatever you call it, ring there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just a little footnote. I don't know why I said that, but
we have one out here and out on the outskirts of Kansas City, and Tristan and my son and I. We'll drive it when the rare occasions we drive into the city. Our route takes us by this thing, and it's always it's monstrous. I mean, it can seat 60,000-80,000 people. It's huge, and it's always empty. No one's ever there.
Oh well,
every
I know.
Time we drive by.
Duh. Well, you know, NASCAR racing is. You know, pardon the expression, but definitely a redneck sport. It's just, you know, I don't know. They have a lot in the North. They tend to be more in the South or the West, Kansas, I guess, yeah. But the idea of, you know, the smell of fuel and smoke and roaring engines, you know, is like people love that. Well, used to when I was in the Army in Tucson, on the Mexican border, Fort Huachuca. I was hanging out with a bunch of reprobates, and you know, we were very bad attitudes and all that. And we used to, guy had a big van, kind of a sleeping van, and we'd all go, you know, like 7-8 of us would go to the drag races, you know, and I remember. Yeah. And we, you know, eat beer and drinking and carousing and hollering and, you know, screaming, smoking, drag race, you know, the smell of fuel and fire and smoke, you know. Yeah, it's really exciting
burnt
stuff.
Rubber.
Yeah, I mean, it's like gets you going there, man, you know.
Well, I can see. Let's go, fuck you, Joe. Fuck you, Biden. I think that's what it is. Fuck you, Biden.
Well, poor Joe Biden. You know, I really feel for the guy today. They ran a picture of him on the front page of the New York Times today, and he's in some room, I guess in Glasgow, and it's a huge, long table with microphones and white tablecloth on it. There's one behind him, and there's one, you know, in front. And everybody's packed in, but he's all alone. There's, like, four spaces between him and next. He's all alone over there, sitting at the table alone. And he's got a mask on, and he's got his hands clasped as almost in thought and prayer. And he's looking, you know, he's got his face in his hands. And it looks like, you know, they obviously picked it for the you know, the what the photograph suggests, you know, the mimic quality, I guess you'd call it, of the photograph. And it just, he looks so pathetic. He looks lost, you know, and it's like, you know, and this is, of course, what the Republicans, the Trumpian McConnell Republicans, are doing. It's what they did with Obama. It's like, we will not let him do anything that's successful. You know, everything has to be a failure. And so he wanted to go to this thing with some package of climate change and whatnot. They would not go for it. You know, that son of a bitch from West Virginia, you know, put the nicks on it. And so, you know, here he is looking very pathetic. You know, it is what it is. And, you know, I guess, you know, I was thinking about this, and the world, you know, of course the Chinese and the Russians aren't going to this thing. When the Russians, I guess, aren't, I guess they're invited to the G20, not the G7. But Xi decided on his own not to go. Why should I go? I am on a roll, baby. And China is just pumping along here, you know. And one thing indicative of China, granted, you know, they have a authoritarian government that is you know, deep tradition in history, and they very, you know, whether or not they originated the pandemic, right? We, you know, the right likes to suggest it came out of China. But one thing that is noticeable in the world is that China was extremely efficient and effective in thwarting the pandemic, COVID-19. Whereas we are over here, you know, tripping on our dicks because the, you know, one side has made it a political football and said, you know, we're not going to take the vaccine, we're not going to wear masks, that way Joe Biden will be a failure, he won't, like China, he won't successfully do this thing. And who gives a fuck if, you know, 1,000 people, 2,000, 3,000, 100,000 die? They don't care. All they want, all these Republicans want, is power. You know, that's all they want. And they don't care if they bring the country down around our shoulders as long as they end up in total control of it, you know, and they can pursue the authoritarian fantasies. And I realized I was reading this Indian, Pashkak Mishra, I think his name is, wonderful analysis of U.S. imperialism and the end of U.S. imperialism, Iraq and Afghanistan and all that. I mean, it takes astute, well-read, educated Indian to really understand where America is right now, because, you know, that's a formal colonized country, right? And so here, the United States does Vietnam, of course, in the 60s, turns out to be an absolute and utter waste of time and human life, because the Vietnamese are our ally, our friend now, like they would have been in 1945 if we hadn't had our head up our ass. And so we wasted all that treasure and money for Vietnam, and then we got into George W. Bush and Iraq, and nobody has a better analysis than this guy. The futile and the absurd and the unnecessariness of that in Afghanistan, and they've ended so badly, you know, especially Afghanistan. You know, I mean, it's a wreck. You know, we helped destroy the place, and here we are. You know, one failure after another, which of course internally we cannot admit. We have to tell ourselves that we're still wonderful. You know, make us great again, you know. And we can't face the facts, whereas people outside the country understand this. They can see what's happening to the United States of America, you know, in this polarized struggle that we're going through. And all it means, and this is why Russia is delighted, this is why China is delighted, all it means is we're throwing monkey wrenches into the system so that America cannot pull itself out of its decline. And so they're exacerbating the decline vis-a-vis all these other countries around the world. And these other countries around the world, they're watching it. They're delighted, you know. And, you know, China is going to eat our lunch because they're so efficient and so powerful and so effective. And so what do we have going on here that nobody really knows about? except Sean Penn the other night was spent 20 minutes railing against the man. John Kerry is a diplomat with an open portfolio, apparently. He's under the radar. Nobody really talks about him. And he, and why John Hannity was so upset with him, why? Why was Sean Hannity so upset? Because John Kerry talking to China. You know, Don Terry is not saying, you know, we're going to bomb you to the Stone Age or something like that. He is actually talking to them as human beings, the way he did with Iran to try to get that, to successfully get that nuclear deal. And he's the people on in Vets for Peace, where I'm at, you know, they can't stand Kerry. They say he's corrupt. Well, goddamn right he's corrupt. But he's not near as corrupt as the other side. But the point is, his corruption is what gives him power. He is able to deal in these worlds. And we can't forget that John Kerry, you know, was the guy that testified before Congress that who wanted to be the last man to die in Vietnam. You know, he was against the war. He was in the VVAW, Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And, well, he then went on to be an established person and gave him to all kinds of corruption, obviously, in the process. And he got power in the process. And, well, now he's doing this. And so you realize that, you know, there is a good channel open between the United States and China to sort of, you know, have a soft landing, this idea of the United States decline and the ascendancy of China, you know, economically and whatnot. And John Kerry is one who's a realist, pragmatist, who's over there talking to these people and dealing with this vast and complex and profound problem of what does the United States do when it's no longer the exceptional, you know, top dog after World War II, you know, when other countries, the rise of the rest, are beginning to eat our lunch. And if we don't pay attention and reinvigorate ourselves, you know, we're going to lose even worse. And that's because the fucking Republicans won't let anything happen, you know? And it's like, why are they doing that? So they could be in charge of the wreckage once they, you know, and it's like, I don't know. It's sickening to watch. It's just,
Well,
anyway,
don't you think
that's how I feel?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is sickening to watch. There's no question about that. I mean, however, you know, I can't help but wonder if, you know, somehow they're profiting off their folly. I mean, they spread these kind of end time myths and dark evil fantasies are always just on the horizon, always.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's always the communists. I mean, I haven't heard that word so much coming out of the mouth of Republicans except in the last, like, I mean, it's shooting out of their mouth, socialism and communism.
Well, it's a safe bet. It's a safe bet. It's been used many, many times before. Look at McCarthy, you know, and look at the Central America in the 80s. You know, everything is, the commies are coming, you know.
It's always,
and, of course, communism is so yesterday, you know. I mean, China is a capitalist empire now, you know. You know, it's like, in fact, they're taking over from Japan in some of this technological stuff. And Russia, of course, Russia was groomed by U.S. capitalists, ruthless capitalists, once, the Soviet Union fell. And, of course, Putin, the smart sucker that he is, figured out how to be the boss of the new public-private gangster Russia, you know. He's riding high now. They love him over there, you know.
Well, he has a real knack at crushing the opposition.
Even to the point of murder.
Yeah, I mean, he does outrageous shit. You know, getting parts of the opposition to crush the opposition. He hasn't mastered the use of state capitalism. Now, that's a very interesting thing if you study that as a Marxist, state capitalism. That's, you know.
Right, exactly.
And he's only really used it in that sense in the energy sector of their economy, where they put the full power of the Russian trade bankers, banking system behind, and oligarchs and criminals behind enterprises, and that's something he's really, in my opinion, he hasn't mastered that very well at all, because internally, domestically, the economy is constantly on the edge, if not in the shithole, and I mean, I think the Chinese have done just the opposite. They have mastered state capitalism.
Right, I think you're right.
The use of it.
And well, the Chinese, you know, they may be totalitarian, they may be authoritarian, but on some level, they are operating with the masses, if you will, the people, if you will, in concert. Yeah. You know, although they don't have a democracy, they realize their rule is only, you know, in these times only as good as you know the consensus that they're acceptable, you know, and you know, there's no big Tiananmen Square or anything going on right now. But
to increase the living standard of a population of a working population, the equivalent of the United States, 350 million people, to raise them 800%, their living standard 800%,
exactly,
and
there you go,
in 40 years. I mean, that's something that's never been done. I hate to sound like Donald Trump, but that has never been done in the history of the world. You know, that many.
Yeah, well, you have to ask, why are the Chinese so successful? Again, they cleaned the clock on the pandemic.
They mastered capitalism.
Right, but they had the capacity. They had the unified capacity to say, "Everybody will get a fucking vaccine. You know, you will get a vaccine. You will get a mask."
Yeah.
And of course, the Chinese have a tradition of wearing masks. You see them in crowds from the 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, there'll be 10% of the people in these crowds are wearing masks if they have cold or something. And so there is a tradition in this socialized country where people, you know, understand the idea of passing on diseases, and they, you know, they're thinking of themselves as more than individuals, exceptional, wonderful, ego-ridden individuals, you know. They're seeing themselves as a society, and it's very effective. It's very effective. And in fact, now I had, you know, General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the other day. I mean, it was kind of astonishing to me that he said this, but he has turned out to be quite an honest man. And he says that the Pentagon was really shocked, I think. They said it's like a Sputnik moment, you know, when the Russians in the 50s sent the satellite up, and the U.S. was going, holy shit, the space race, they're beating us, you know. Well, he said, General Milley, head of the military in America, that this supersonic rocket that delivers atomic weapons that they are testing really shocked the United States military, which means, you know, they got us with our pants down. They have the capacity to send a rocket that our defense mechanisms are at some great difficulty to stop. And so suddenly here, this is the area of our forte. In other words, China may be, you know, beating us economically, but hey, we have the guns and the bombs and the planes, you know, and the submarines, you know, and the A-bombs. We have more than anybody else, you know, so look out. I mean, that's the country we've evolved into, you know, with a huge, huge, untenable, unbelievable military budget that we've now are so accustomed to we can't get rid of. Suddenly, the Chinese are, they're keeping pace with us. In fact, they may be ahead of us on this, you know. It's like, wait a minute, we've always been top dog when it goes to blowing people up and incinerating hundreds of thousands of people, you know. Well, maybe the Chinese are able to do that now, too. And suddenly, I think the United States is terrified of China. I'm really glad that John Kerry, the guy with the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, as an old guy, you know, a tempered old man, is over there talking to the Chinese rather than all this saber-rattling horse shit, you know?
Well, anyway. I'll tell you what, John. I'm going to go down to the school board and scream that at the head of the school board today on voting day. Today is November 2nd.
Good.
I can't vote in the local school boards because I'm not a villager. But I can go down there like any other good Trumpian, as a Trumpian, and go down there and just scream and yell about how, you know, my kid shouldn't wear, is suffocating from wearing a mask, and when we give him the shot, he's gonna turn into a zombie, and you know, we've got to stop the communist Democrat in the county, in Jefferson County, from destroying the world. I just don't know how to put it. I just got to be.
Yeah.
But it's a thing that's happening all over the country. I mean.
I know. Well, there's a story in the paper about that. The idea that you know, the politics, local politics, is sort of gravitating to school boards. And here in our local school board, two black women just were running, and I think they probably have a shoe in here. So there'll be two black women on the largely white suburb on the school board. And you know, I know them both, and they're both in the group my wife helped start called CARSI, this colonial school area race group. I don't know what the hell the title means.
Well,
but, CARSI.
Right.
But I did a story on them, and so, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to, you know, if they start having public meetings and these clowns come out of the woodwork screaming about masks, or I went to one meeting where about gender issues, and the board wasn't very good on that. They sort of appeased all the crazy pronoun gangs and all that. And of course, the head of the school board was then voted out, you know. Anyway, my thing is, if, you know, if it gets crazy, I'm going to go in, and like you said, I'm going to start screaming too, you know. Okay, you guys can scream, I can fucking scream, you know.
Oh, John.
Screaming.
I think our job is... Well, I don't know.
We're supposed to be
know.
Better than that. Oh, okay.
It's not better than that. I think we got to be sort of, I think you and I, at least for me,
right.
I've been chiding my Democrat, you know, because the Democrats are a quarter of the population registered in this county. I mean, literally very small.
Right.
And, I've been trying to get them to take tape recorders just because the newspapers, the local newspapers do not cover. They'll cover the minutes. They'll cover who goes in. But if there's ever a conflict, it's just sort of
it's
written through. I don't know how.
I know that. And they do all the deals. I know I've been to so many meetings of supervisors and whatnot. You know, they do all the deals in the back room, right? And then they come in and they have an agenda. It's the third light on the agenda, and they'll give a little code of what it is. And then they'll all raise it, any discussion, no discussion, and then they vote on it. You're going like, wait a minute, what the fuck did they just do, you know? And if you don't really know what they're doing in the back room,
you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Well, they're notoriously, school boards are notoriously boring anyhow. I mean, hell.
Yeah, well, they are, no question about it. Yeah,
I mean, there's no way around it. But I'm just saying that, you know, getting people to hey, I think there's smoke, you know, there might be a fire somewhere in there.
Right.
So
to get people to just
talk, you know, the opposition to talk, not necessarily at the board, but just to each other. I don't think the now you're obviously
in Pennsylvania, you're light years ahead of us. Because out here, the opposition is nil. You know. And
well, you guys, you're well, deep me, red
I'll
state.
Give,
you know.
I'll
yeah.
Give you, I'll give you a short example. It just happened last weekend, listeners. By the way, we had a caller, and I put him in the green room, and he. You can call back, listener. I mean, you can call
yeah,
back.
Yeah, please call back.
Put your hand up.
Let's talk.
Yeah, he put his hand up, and I put him in the green room. I said, "I'll get you on. You know, what's your first name?" And he balked and hung up. I was like, "Well, okay.
Oh, well, yeah. There you go. Got a little shy at the last
anyhow,
minute there.
Yeah. He got microphone fright at his last minute, I guess. But right. Anyhow, so here's a good example in Kansas. The heat is shifting from the school board. They had over the weekend, well, Friday and Saturday, a special committee meeting at the state capitol. And that's sort of where all the heat is because there's very little. I mean, let's be honest. It's dreary old Kansas. Dreary is the right
dreary
word. Dreary
old Kansas.
Dreary old. You could call it.
Oh, weird. That's not very attractive. Why would anybody want to visit Kansas if you talk about
that,
it that
that's
way?
An inside joke. Inside joke. I mean, because it's like, let's go, Brandon, only this is a little more cynical than that. If it's possible to be more cynical, it is in Kansas. And dreary old Kansas has a history because it used to be called, a lot of the old people, I'm talking 70, 80, 90, 100 years old, remember there were some people who were, I can't remember who it was. I think it was someone like, who was that? The H.L. Mencken.
Oh, right.
I think some famous journalist once came through Kansas and said, and used the word "dear old Kansas," and it caught on as like, yeah, it's not only old, it's boring, you know. The golden age of Kansas. The golden age of Kansas ended when John Brown left the place. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well. Yeah.
But I get that. So this is a dreary old Kansas, and Topeka at the State House this weekend. They had these people who showed up. It was called the Committee for Government Overreach on Mandates in COVID-19.
Oh my!
Every lunatic in the state that had a car.
And some who caught the train.
I'm a pretty good inside guy, you know, on the state legislature.
Right.
I got my
sources,
and they'll tip me off. They did not tip me off. And I was like, I did not know it was coming. And I didn't discover it till Sunday. The meeting was over. It went 2 days, and it opened up 2 hours or 6 hour days each. And they put it all on YouTube, by the way, listeners. You go to my Facebook page, and you can – good. But what it was 2 hours. It was a lot of Republican government elected people, union leaders who were probably Trump people, but they just somehow ended up the head of a union, you know, the machinist union, a few doctors. This was the first day. And then after that, some guy got up with purple hair and a leather outfit and started going on about a Chinese conspiracy to destroy the country. And
absolutely.
And everybody God, and they broke out into singing America the Beautiful at one time. it was just one of the most freaky.
You know, that's really effective when you have China breathing down your throat. It's really effective to have a good rousing round of America the Beautiful. That really helps, you know, that really helps.
With a purple-haired leather guy, like S&M. He looked like he was deep into S&M.
Wow. That's pretty kinky for a boring state like Kansas.
And he was 70 and 80 years old. He was old, and he gets up there with purple-haired leather, and I'm like, what the fuck? And then people would come in. There was one clown after another condemning the shots, condemning the vaccination, wearing masks, and then some of them would waffle. I could do the mask, but the shot's going to kill me. And it was just one thing after another. How dare you make our kids have shots in the world?
Right.
And well, the you boogeyman know what the, is China, or the boogeyman is Biden. And I
those
say,
damn
I don't,
commies
I,
again. Those commies are coming back, you know,
And I think one of them said, yelled, let's go, or let's go, Brandon. I mean, it was just a big festival of madness.
Oh, Brandon,
you know,
again. Yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me. Remember the idea that fluoridation. I think that came up actually in Dr. Strangelove. That you know, when General Jack Ripper lost his mind and he talked about purity of essence and you know he was against fluoridation. Remember fluoridation of water supplies was a communist plot. I don't know why I'm reminded of that right now.
It was bodily fluids, I think was the body, key word.
Oh, precious bodily fluids, of course.
Bodily
right.
fluids, yeah.
Yes, precious bodily fluids. And of course, it came to him, you know, this idea to start World War III and all this, it came to him in the act of love. You know?
Yeah.
No, I always loved General Jack Ripper, Sterling Hayden. He's just absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
You know the way they used to have midnight showings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and all the loony kids would go down and play the parts and act it out. Well, I always wanted to do it for adults. You know, we could have one for adults, and we could all watch Dr. Strangelove, and
Jack
we could
Ripper.
Assume the parts, and I wanted to be General Jack Ripper. I wanted to be
Jack Ripper.
Mandrake
get the feeling that Sterling Hayden would have been a box office success for the John Birch Society. I mean, the guy was actually he knew what you get the feeling that he'd been around him enough. He knew he knew how to act, body language, and everything.
Well, he did things like I think he sailed lightly around the world in a sailboat. So he was a very adventurous guy, Sterling. You know, I always liked him, but that's just my favorite role in the whole, you know, General Jack Ripper.
You're leaving a very important part out of his career.
What?
He was a monster novelist. His books were huge. As a novel,
really?
His novels were huge.
Sterling
and,
Hayden?
Yes, and he was attributed. At one time he attributed his movie career failing because he smoked too much pot.
You're kidding! Back in those days, good man.
Check it out.
No wonder I like the guy. You know, he's a pothead.
Sterling Hayden, marijuana, and novelist. It's an amazing story about him.
Oh, I'll check that out.
That's one of the reasons that my wife keeps me around.
You just know all those little details. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
If it comes down to marijuana and riding and goofing off, to use our words, I'm a pro at it.
That's good. Well, I mean, I consider, you know, some people would consider things I do goofing off, but I don't consider them goofing off. I consider them living, and I consider, as a writer, things are going on in my mind all the time. When I'm sitting there with my mouth open and drooling, look like an idiot, you know, something's going on in there, you know what I mean? You can...
Well, that no wonder we can relate to Joe Biden being left without his walker.
Exactly. I feel for the guy.
France.
Like, God, talk about marginalization. He's being marginalized.
In Scotland, no less. In Scotland, yeah.
But I'm just reading, I just got a book. I just bought it by Richard Rorty. He's a dead philosopher. He died in 2007. But it's called Pragmatism as Anti-Authoritarianism, and he's a pragmatist, and you know, John Dewey, William James, those guys, you know.
Yeah.
And pragmatism is the only purely American school of philosophy. So the Cornel West is considered to be in that strain of philosopher, you know. And very interesting people. And so Richard Rorty has this, you know, 10, 12 essays. And I've been reading, it's just, he's so right on. It's like that pragmatism is the solution to this rise of authoritarianism. In other words, pragmatism, his pragmatism acts as if, you know, I hate to say it this way for some people, might offend them, but God is dead. You know, there is no God. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, we're on our own, whether we like it or not, you know. The idea of God is wonderful, you know. My wife and I talk about this all the time. And, you know, the idea of a larger mystery and all that kind of stuff. But what he's talking about is the authoritarians hark back to the days of you know, when in the Dark Ages, when you had this chain of being, they called it. You know, God was at the top, and then you had the king, and then you had the military, and then you had the priests, and then you had the police, and then you had the bakers and the, you know, the farmers, and then there's poor you at the bottom of this chain of being, you know, which is an authoritarian pecking order, you know. And the Enlightenment came along and broke that, because there were a lot of people who said, well, no, we're in this together. We can make our own decisions. We don't have to rely on the idea that we're sinners because God says we're sinners. We can actually negotiate a contract, a social contract, that's beneficial to all of us, you know, the fundamentals of democracy. And so it's a wonderful book about, you know, how pragmatism works to defend democracy against this rise of authoritarianism we see everywhere, including Donald Trump, etc. So a lot of interesting things going on in this struggle. Yeah.
I think another embodiment of pragmatism, a cute little phrase, from China, Deng Xiaoping, he says, black cat, white cat, who cares what color it is, as long as it gets the mouse.
There you go. Now, that is an anti-racist. That is a Chinese fellow who realizes, you know, I mean, it's sort of a veiled criticism of the United States and our racist problem, you know.
He was using that after the death of Mao Zedong. Right. And he was really talking about the liberal, quote-unquote, liberal reforms, economic reforms he supported that. He supported the rise of some kind of state-controlled capitalism or, in many cases, small vegetable vendors, small capitalists and on the village scale. I mean, he was really talking. That's what he was talking about. I know. I've studied the guy.
Yeah.
I studied that.
No, it's interesting. Yeah.
He was referring to the economic system back in this would be 1979.
Yeah, right. Deng Xiaoping.
Yeah, and that's when it all.
Well,
started.
It's made all
that's
the difference. I mean, this is why China's going to eat our lunch, or is eating.
Well, they are eating. They have already ate our lunch, man.
Exactly.
Really
they've been
eating our
lunch for years. You know. You know, I mean, what do they own? How much U.S. debt do they own? They have us by the gonads, you know?
I wouldn't say all that. I would say this, that, you know, they made things better, and we bought it. We bought them. You know, we bought the gadgets. We bought the everything, telephones. And what's more important, they convinced the finance capitalists and the people who are like the head of Apple the tennis shoes or – the people that have the money, they convinced those people to come over there and produce them over there, cheaper, and with Chinese labor and other incentives to do that. And that they subverted finance capital, a lot of them from America, to go over there and use their workers. The 375 million extra workers, and
and a lot of labor pool. Over
and
there.
It was good for them. It was good for their people, and it was good for
for the financiers from around the world to do that. And we were crazy. It wasn't the consumer's fault by any means. And it wasn't at fault, was it? Well, I guess. Maybe it was. But the point is, they beat us at our own game, if you ask me. So,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Black cat.
And the problem for us consumers is, you know, especially as the country's coming around our necks and shoulders and falling, collapsing in many ways, you know, it's not a smooth running, humming machine anymore, the United States of America, because of this polarization and all the craziness. And, you know, it's just that we've created so much crap for ourselves, and this idea that we need the newest thing, and you know, we're just so lost in consumerism, it seems to me, that, you know, we've kind of lost our soul a little bit. We got to, you know, although I'm sounding pretty religious, think about a soul. I don't know that there is a soul.
Well, I mean, come on.
You know what
I mean, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I don't know about losing my soul. I guess I lost it this morning on Prime Amazon. I lost my soul on Prime
soul
Amazon.
This morning.
On Prime Amazon. On Amazon.
How'd you do that? Yeah.
I clicked. I couldn't resist it. I clicked on a portable transistor radio that I could get for like $15.
Uh-huh.
It has a weather automatically comes on if there's a tornado within like 5-10 miles through NOAA. NOAA.
Oh, is that
N-A-O-O,
one of those? Has a crank on it?
Yeah.
One of those crank?
Yeah. No. This is better than
no,
that.
No.
It runs off two AA batteries, and it has also has AM, FM radio, so I can, it goes to sleep. You can program it to go to sleep or come back on as an alarm. It is just a wonderful thing. It's the size of smaller than the palm of your hand.
Wow.
Left is it from China. And I said I need some earbuds. So for $20, I got two for the price of 20.
There you go.
And I clicked that, and now because I'll tell you why. 40 years ago, or more like 50 years ago, I could not lay in my bed and listen to my transistor radio without some brother, sibling, or parent coming in and telling me to turn that off. Okay, but
now you can
for less than $20, dude. I mean, I could listen to all the late night radio and be alerted on weather from China. Now that's
and you can run that stuff into your head, and nobody has any idea what you're listening to.
Yeah, nobody knows, and it doesn't bother anybody. So the dogs and the cats, they don't know. But you know, let me ask you a question. This is a question everyone's talking about out here.
Okay.
And I hear it from with my friends on the telephone. Have you seen shortages on the shelves of your stores? And are you sure there are shortages, or is it just, you know, is it just?
That's a good question. I obviously when the pandemic, you know, the most classic memory was, you know, the empty shelves in the grocery store for toilet paper. For some reason, toilet paper was at a premium. I don't know why people wiped their ass more when they had the pandemic. I don't understand that, but there was a crazy thing about toilet paper, you know. And but nowadays, I don't notice in the store. I really don't notice. I haven't noticed. I don't know. But, you know, of course, there are backlogs of transportation, transit stuff. It's incredible, yeah. I mean, that's all part of the situation. It's coming unglued. The fact that the United States is politically disabled because of the polarization and the Republicans throwing monkey wrenches into every positive thing they might do in this country, that, you know, there's that. And then this pandemic hits. It's like a double whammy, you know. And I realized I was talking to my neighbor the other day. I realized, you know, like, God, I've suddenly become, without realizing it, I'm a hermit. You know, I stay in my house and I go out to get groceries and, you know, I don't, and I'm going like, I need to get out more, you know. and it's, you know, that's,
hello?
I mean, that's thrown a monkey wrench into keeping track of my school board, keeping track of the supervisors of the police department, which I used to do. Or, and, you know, like they don't want to talk to you because of the pandemic. And so they are also hermetic in that they can make decisions without anybody knowing it because of the pandemic. And so it's really had an impact. And again, I hark back to Mark, your truck driver brother, the idea of a truck driver's image of a tunnel. You know, we're sort of now coming out of the pandemic tunnel. And as Mark pointed out, when we come out of the tunnel, we're not going to be the same country we were when we went into the tunnel.
I think that is true.
And we're now dealing in that transition and that shift and adjustment. And, you know, it's driving people nuts, especially the right, you know. Wait a minute. You mean I can't be Mr. Tough Guy Top Dog anymore? What's going on here? I thought that was God-given. I thought God said, yes, go forth and multiply and rule the world, you know. But, you know, it's different. It's a different country.
Have you seen any shortage in the shelves?
No, I know. To answer your question, no, I don't. I'm not cognizant of any. No, yeah. I mean, it seems and you look at other societies that don't have a lot of things. It's like we're swamped. We're overwhelmed with crap. And of course, all those ships, dozens and dozens of ships, parked for weeks off of the ports in Los Angeles and other places. They're full of consumer crap from all over the world, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that the country's going to have to do, and, you know, is coming out as a different country, it's going to have to figure out how to ease up and lessen the amount of crap that we have. Let's just focus on more vital and important things. So we can spend our limited resources and our limiting power on, you know, what's important, the more vital and fundamental things, without all this marketing crap on TV with cartoons and us telling, oh, you've got to have this, you got to have that. If you don't have this, you're just not cool, and, you know. Slow me down
radio.
Here, Mike. Straighten me out.
I needed that radio.
Well, God bless your little radio. I mean, your little radio is very effective. It has a purpose. In other words, it's a vital thing.
The one I purchased 4 years ago was just like it, except it didn't have a tornado alert on it. You know, I have a tornado alarm now.
Well, what happens when the tornado? We have a very busybody Montgomery County place that got my phone number in Loann's, and they have a tornado or storm warning that remember those old submarine movies when they would say ooga dive suddenly in the middle of the room I hear this ooga you know, it's like dive I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Oh, there's a tornado warning. Tornadoes for us, of course, is our novel thing. For you guys out in Tornado Alley, it's a normal life experience. Tornadoes blowing off roofs near Dave Lindorf's house, that's news, you know. That's real news.
Yeah. 10 miles away is cause for a little bit of alarm, but not much.
That
means you need to go out and watch it. Where it goes. Okay, we only got 6 minutes.
Okay,
two other
go ahead.
Things happening right now in the United States. Two other things, big things. We have the trial, and speaking of these big, powerful guys, these big, powerful conservatives, Charlottesville, the trial of the civil action lawsuits against the crazy Unite the Right people at Charlottesville is begun.
Right.
The civil trial has begun today, yesterday, Monday.
Excellent.
And today, Cal Rittenhouse's trial is all over the place. It's all over live.
Right,
feeds,
Kyle Rittenhouse. Well, you know, I've been reading about the other fellow, you know, Rohert or something his name is, the guy that was security for the Antifa gangs, and he ended up threatened by some guy, and I think that the guy was physically had a knife and things, and he shot the goddamn guy dead on the street. And he was charged with murder, and the FBI surrounded him and gunned him down. You know, whereas you look at what happened to Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, he shoots dead two people, wounds a third, and he's walking down with his gun, you know, turning himself in to the police. They just completely go by. They don't give a rat's ass about him. And, of course, you know, he's been treated with kid gloves. Meanwhile, guy who's doing legitimate security for Antifa and could have argued, I think had an excellent case for arguing self-defense, never gets a chance to make that argument because he's shot with, you know, 45 bullets. Now, the claim is that he shot at the FBI first, but who knows? If he did that, he was a fool. He should have laid down on the ground and gone to trial because I think he would have won. But he's dead, so what are you going to do? But, yeah, the Kyle Rittenhouse is a very interesting case, yeah.
Well, you can see it now, live, all over YouTube, Bill, and on your TV, I'm sure. It's now right here.
I like it. I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I think he's still free. On a $2 million
bail. Yeah, I think he's
bond.
On bail. I think somebody paid a huge bail.
And it was that money was raised by some of the most biggest digs in the country.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
For my terms.
Right.
And
that if you're on the right and you shoot a leftist, it's justified. But if you're on the left and you shoot a rightist, well, I don't know. The law has to take care of you and either kill you or charge you or whatever. There seems to be a very obvious double standard here. I mean, this is not new.
Well,
this has happened many, many times. But.
Well, it is news. It is news because most people are not as old as you or me. So, but here's
Wait,
the news,
that's wonderful.
Here's the news I got. Okay, the judge, his name is, what is his name? Bruce Schrader. Bruce. He's the judge, and he ruled Friday, he ruled to the prosecution, he cautioned the prosecution and said you cannot call them victims. Rittenhouse shot. You can't call them victims, and you can call them looters, rioters, talk about, you can't do that, you have to do that in front of the jury. So already got this guy, this Judge Schrader down, and Rittenhouse has some of the best use of lethal force attorneys in the country defending him. I think he's going to walk. I really do.
Yeah, I'm afraid he's going to walk too. And here's the guy, and I see him. He'll be convicted. He's charged with 3 counts of murder or homicide. And he's a misdemeanor. He's also charged with a misdemeanor for owning a weapon or carrying a weapon, unlicensed weapon, underage. And so I'm thinking he'll be convicted of the misdemeanor of, you know, unlawful use of a weapon. And it's like, but I would not be surprised if some ridiculous end judgment like that happened. First of all, what is a 17-year-old waving around a loaded,
rifle?
Anyway, somebody should have stopped this young little baby-faced clown, you know? It's like, what are we going to do?
Crime jazz. True crime.
All right. Well, here we are. We've wasted another hour. Take it easy, Mike.
John Durant.
All right,
John
Mike. Durant.
Tuesday.